tipping. It's a core element of
and
most
New
of the
Jersey Senator
sector.
Cory Booker and part-time superhero, if you remember that story.
This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with an analyst about the lack of tipping. Also this week, it's a day of action when it comes to net neutrality. And finally, will Amazon ever stop eating the world? All that and a little more comes your way now.
Well, you heard her. I've teed up myself to cover three topics in one segment, so I'm going to get started with tipping, that little something extra that you leave in certain situations for service industry employees. Personal front page, I still feel guilty about taking a dollar bill off a cafe table when I was about 8 years old. Now, if you combine that with a stint as a waiter and front of house restaurant manager in New Orleans, I've been over tipping ever since. Okay, sorry, I digress.
All right, everybody cough up some green for the little lady. Come on, throw in a buck.
I don't tip.
You don't tip?
No, I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in tipping?
You know what these chicks make? They make shit. Don't give me that. She don't make enough money, she can quit.
Let me just get this straight. You don't ever tip, huh?
I don't tip because society says I have to. All right, I mean, I'll tip if somebody really deserves a tip. If they really put forth the effort, I'll give them something extra. But, I mean, it's tipping automatically. It's for the birds. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're just doing their job.
Data collected and analyzed over at creditcards.com shows that the best tippers are males. They are Republicans, and they live in the Northeast. Now, don't worry, West Coasters. You're right in the middle of the pack when it comes to tipping.
One in five sit-down restaurant goers don't leave any tip at all, at least every once in a while. And that just blew me away. Frankly, most servers rely on tips just to get by, and I think most people understand that.
That was Matt Schultz, senior analyst at creditcards.com.
Come on, throw in a buck.
I don't tip.
You don't tip?
No, I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in tipping?
Now, before we move on to Amazon eating the world, let's recap and maybe shame some of these tipping numbers. 20% of restaurant goers do not tip. That's ludicrous, people. If you see this behavior, please correct it. It's not just rude, it's mean. Beyond restaurants, the level of tipping is still kind of sporadic. 27% of hotel customers always tip their housekeeper. 31% never do. 29% who visit coffee shops always tip their barista. 30% never do. 67% always tip their hairstylist. 12% never do. Here's the difference in the sexes, too. When it comes to hotel housekeepers, 47% of women always tip versus just 33% of men. So here's Uncle Jason's tip to clip. The rule of thumb when tipping your hotel housekeeper, which you definitely should do, is $5 for every night of your stay. Just stash it under the remote control or in an envelope. Don't worry, it feels good. For more on the creditcards.com tipping report, check out KGORadio.com/Techonomics or head on over to their page. Now, let's look at Amazon, its recent 30-hour sale called Prime Day, and its seemingly endless appetite to gobble up competition. Amazon's third Prime Day was the biggest day ever in Amazon's history. Now, think about that. Amazon is predicted to control half, 50% of all online sales by the year 2021. This year's Prime sales grew by 60% compared to the same 30 hours last year. One leading e-commerce analyst put it this way: Amazon is absolutely trying to create an event with the retail black hole-like gravitational field of Black Friday. So he had to use a planetary metaphor to capture the size and scope of what Amazon is doing. And if you unpack the top selling item, I predict that next year's Prime Day is going to jump another 50%. But the overall year will also see a 15% rise in all online orders. And here's why.
We are number one.
Amazon's Echo, which you activate by saying Alexa, was being sold at half price, just $90. Now, that's a loss leader in a very active space, voice-activated technology, ordering, and queries. Subscription services like ordering refills for household needs like detergent, that's going to play a role. Remember those little push buttons that Amazon released that automatically reorder stuff? It's just as easy as saying it to Alexa.
Unable to comply. Replicators are offline.
Amazon Prime Day also, of course, is about expanding the subscriber base for Prime. The free 2-day shipping feature and the access to Amazon's video and audio services. All of those boxes and shipping expectations have compelled Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos to build his own fleet of jumbo jet cargo carriers. And this Prime Day was the first one with something like that fleet going wheels up. According to Fortune.com, approximately 40 jets leased from Atlas Air, that's Amazon's air cargo partner since last May, make up the Prime Air cargo fleet, flying to at least 10 U.S. airports as of the end of last year. Beyond trucks, the cargo air service complements deliveries made via UPS and FedEx, but also signals another move to corral more of its delivery logistics in-house. Now, that last part is critical, and it leads to my final point. Logistics. Amazon is a massive, efficient, redundant, and still scalable logistics operation, which means in almost any industry, if Bezos points Amazon's capabilities at something, it's going to disrupt it, if not destroy it. For the most recent case in point, just look at grocery deliveries. Startups have come and gone around this concept. Google is still trying to work out timely deliveries of fresh produce itself. But so is Amazon, and then the CEO announces that Amazon wants to buy Whole Foods as well. It's the classic buy versus build, and Amazon can buy whatever it needs until the feds, of course, get involved and terms like antitrust start appearing in headlines and speeches. Think where Amazon started, selling books. It disrupted that market, driving small bookstores out of business. Now Amazon is actually building its own bookstores. Bezos burned it down and built it back up again in his image and with his branding. Finally, Amazon Web Services. Sounds kind of wonky, right?
Receiving. Over.
You're probably imagining huge, dull warehouses full of servers. And you're right. But remember, Amazon Web Services powers about one-third of all internet traffic globally. Not just commerce, the whole damn thing. And when will Amazon stop eating the world?
Nice chatting with you.
Indeed. And speaking of the internet, let's check in on our pet project, Net Neutrality. And the most recent barbarian at the gate, FCC Chair Ajit Pai. If you're scoring at home, net neutrality is the concept that all websites are created equal.
Net neutrality is the idea that your pipe to the internet, whether that is your cable internet connection, your LTE wireless internet connection, however you are receiving information via the internet, that pipeline to the internet is not allowed to arbitrarily pick favorites in terms of the content that you consume. For example, if you like to use Google search and your roommate likes to use Bing search, your internet service provider can't say, well, Bing is paying us a lot of money, so we're going to slow down Google and Yahoo and their other search engine competitors to make Bing load fast.
That was Tay Zonde from Chocolate Rain fame. Now, that said, of course, Netflix is paying a premium to Comcast for a preferential status, but that's a side topic, really. This week, net neutrality saw a day of action, and if you blinked, you missed it, because only 10 million users were activated to post, discuss, or comment about the FCC's plans to roll back these internet user protections. 2.1 million people did comment on the FCC site, but I think if 2.1 billion comments happened, I don't think it would matter. FCC Chair Ajit Pai says he doesn't really care about the public or its petty comments. He also is a former top lawyer for Verizon.
Well, it's not crazy to say, well, he's just an ideologue, you know, like the Ayn Rand is a hell of a drug. You know, he read one book, and the most dangerous thing in the world is to only read one book.
That's Cory Doctorow. He's a member and proponent of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. He's also the co-founder of BoingBoing.net and an author several times over. His most recent work of fiction is called Walk Away. Corey's metaphor that the internet is the central nervous system of our daily lives, yeah, I've borrowed that and I've used it ever since. We thought it worthy to re-air just part of my recent interview with Corey because net neutrality is important, and we hope if you won't take my word for it, maybe his will convince you. We start with some other duplicitous dealings from major corporations. First, why is it not piracy if Disney uses a Grimm's fairy tale for a movie plot, but it is piracy if someone uses Mickey Mouse in a piece of fan fiction? From that point on in the discussion, we dive into the hypocrisy of ISPs as well as that of the chairman of the FCC.
He just literally believes that if you remove regulation, you get competition and then you get better outcomes. And the problem with that doctrine, one problem with that doctrine, is that it exempts from the universe of things that we call regulation all of the things that we're already doing. So it says, oh, well, we create a rule that says that they're allowed to dig up the streets and we give them rights of way down rail lines and all the rest of it.
Right.
That's not regulation. It's only when we tell them what to do afterwards that that's regulation.
Right.
And it's a special kind of, you know, self-serving BS. It's something that we're all prone to, right? That thing that I'm doing isn't the bad thing I'm railing against. It's only the slightly different version that you want that's the thing I'm railing against. It comes up a lot, right? It comes up when you see companies that make their living from grabbing bits of popular culture and making new kinds of media. And they say, when we do that, that is like legitimate borrowing that is in the service of artistic expression.
Right.
But when like you make fan fiction or fan films or when you share it with your friends or whatever, that's just piracy. And, you know, if you're like a Martian sitting watching the Earth through a telescope and you ask me to explain why it's piracy when someone takes Mickey Mouse and remixes them in a comic that's critical of Disney, but it's not piracy when Disney takes Grimm's Brothers Fairy Tales
right.
or Lewis Carroll, there's no obvious answer why one is like morally right and one is morally wrong. The law is kind of an incoherent mishmash. And, you know, if you want to be an honest broker, you would say, well, maybe one is legal and one isn't legal, but it's certainly not consistent
mm-hmm.
to say one and the other. And like here we have this with net neutrality where we say, oh, well, like a phone company is nothing but a bundle of regulations, you know, in a hard shell of greed. But that's not really the regulation we're worried about. We're only worried about this other regulation. You know, it's not like so far off from like rules that prohibit people from getting together and deciding what they're going to demand from their employer. That's totally wrong. But employers getting together and deciding what kind of offers they're going to give to their employees, that's totally cool. And it might just be that you say, well, I just think that rich people are smarter than workers. And so I think that they should be allowed to collude, but their workers shouldn't. And that at least would be, you know, intellectually honest and morally consistent. But really what you mostly get is just self-serving BS that says, oh, no, that's not collusion.
Right.
This is collusion.
Right. Well, the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, is not alone in its opposition to AgitPi's stance on this, but it is a leader. It's a thought leader in this
sure.
space. So what specifically is EFF doing right now to push back?
Well, EFF is part of a broad coalition that is getting people out into the streets about this. It's getting letters written. And I imagine that when there's legal challenges to be mounted, there'll be some of that as well. We're also involved in trying to figure out exactly what happened with the FCC and all of the fake comments and all of the
yes,
the
after the John
comments.
Oliver.
Yeah. I mean, we have this case of, I think it's 500,000 identity thefts.
Yeah, right.
Where in alphabetical order, data from what may have been a voter registration breach was used to file identical comments that the FCC says, you know, out of an abundance of inclusiveness and not wanting to potentially discount comments from the public, they're going to include in. And at the same time, they're claiming that all those people who watched John Oliver and tried to go and tell them they thought net neutrality was important, that those people who missed out because their servers crashed weren't in any way prevented from participating in this regulatory proceeding because, after all, the site was brought down by a mysterious denial of service attack, no details of which can be given to the public. And I expect we're going to get involved in that in some way as well. It's the kind of place where we often play a role.
Yeah, no doubt. And back to the Go FCC yourself. I think it still is up. It's still redirecting to their proper page.
I think that's right.
But we still don't know if they're seeing anything that we type into it.
Well, and I think that that Go FCC Yourself project is an interesting example of the lack of consistency in the FCC's line here. Because on the one hand, they say, oh, we had these 500,000 fake comments that are obviously fake that we're going to include in because we're so interested in hearing from the public. But the reason John Oliver had to set up Go FCC Yourself is that even finding the form to tell them what you think of.
Yeah, it was buried.
It's really, really hard. So it's this like weird shortcut that goes through several layers of it. And that may be just the fact that, you know, overall government IT contracting is fraught with lots of problems that end up with bad stuff. But if indeed like their top priority, like if job one at the FCC is make sure it's easy to get comments in, then figuring out how to bypass that normal government boondoggle in IT sourcing would be a lot more tangible expression of it than including in 500,000 obviously fake comments.
And once you get to the comment page, you still have to double click. It's like you don't, you may hit okay and you think you've submitted, but you haven't. You have to go another step farther. It's a little shady. It's a little less than transparent. That's what we're all going for, is a little transparency.
When it's easier for a bot to participate in a rulemaking than it is for a human to participate in a rulemaking, it's hard to argue that that rulemaking is being contoured to maximize participation from stakeholders.
Right. Well, I've been trying to raise Mr. Pai for a couple of weeks. I know he was on a sister show recently, so we have a way in. We're going to try to get him back in to talk.
Well, it'd be interesting to have him talk to people who work in your listenership, given how much tech there is around here.
Right. Yeah. You can still leave a comment against the repeal of net neutrality or a different opinion, thanks to John Oliver's Vanity Redirect of a URL and New Jersey Senator Cory Booker and part-time superhero, if you remember that story. He says it best.
Go FCC yourself. That's where you need to go. Please, please, please go to this website. GoFCCYourself.com. Let your voice be heard.
It's going to do it for this week's show. Please check us out at KGORadio.com/techonomics. We have podcasts and stories there. They have extra reference links for everything we discuss. We are also on Audioboom, Stitcher, and iTunes if you farm for podcasts there. And we're on Facebook, Facebook.com/techonomicsradio. We post the music we play each week there as well. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, my name is Jason Middleton. You've been listening to Techonomics. So thanks for that and have great weeks, everybody.